Hello, welcome to Frequencies Episode 7. My name is Michael J. Johnson. I'm your host. Thank you for listening. It's the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, and instead of shopping, I am here recording an episode of my podcast. Got a couple things to talk about. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about the new Jocko documentary that just came out, created by Robert Trujillo. Having spent 10 years in Miami, even though when I went there, it was after Jocko was already passed, I ended up meeting a lot of people who knew him and ended up hearing a lot about him. And of course, before that, I had heard him play and was blown away by his playing. And I read the book, too, the Jocko book, which was great. I learned a lot from that. But this documentary is great because there is some video footage, apparently, from many phases in his career. And so they were able to use that. And they were able to, like I said, interview a lot of people who knew him and played with him and interview some of his surviving family members. You know, there's a few people who aren't around anymore who it would have been kind of nice if they had been able to be a part of this. In particular, I'm thinking of Larry Warlow, who was really the guy who did a lot of the behind-the-scenes work. He did all those big band arrangements for Jocko and worked with Jocko quite a bit as an arranger and a copyist. And he passed away about 5 years ago. So it was probably right before they really started working on this film in earnest. So that's probably why they didn't get a chance to have him. But it's kind of sad to me because he really could have brought a lot of insight to that. And I was also a little bit disappointed that the film didn't really recognize his contribution at all. However, in some of the supporting interviews, Randy Brecker did. Randy Brecker specifically pointed out that Larry Warlow was a big part of those solo albums. It made me happy to see someone like him actually come out and give Larry some props for what he did. Anyway, this documentary was produced by, like I said, Robert Trujillo, bassist for Metallica. They got a lot of great interviews for it. My friend and Berkeley colleague Steve Bailey is there a little bit. Kenwood Denard, another Berkeley colleague. A friend of mine from Florida, who also was very important in terms of those two records and some of the live gigs that they did out of them, which was Peter Graves. And Ira Sullivan, another Florida guy. Of course, they got other big-name bass players. They talked to Flea, and they talked to Geddy Lee, Victor Bailey, and Victor Wooten. A lot of other guys like that. So this was a very well-done documentary, I think. Some other great players were involved. Mike Stern, of course, other people he played with. Peter Erskine, Wayne Shorter, Joni Mitchell. They talk a little bit about his son Felix, who actually plays a lot like him. Oh, I have a couple bass players I forgot to mention. Sting, Bootsy Collins. They also talk to Carlos Santana and Herbie Hancock, Al Di Meola. This really does give a good overview of Jocko's trajectory and how he started out and was doing so well, but then his, what they call demons, his bipolar disorder and his substance use and that sort of thing, how that kind of slowly took him over. It's hard to think of the fact that in his last couple of years, he was homeless, he was living in the park. Before that, when he was in New York, he was like, you know, sleeping in the lobby of a rehearsal place for a while and things like that. And he just had gone off the rails and people didn't want to work with him anymore. And it's just sad to see someone of that genius and that caliber as a player, you know, a guy who truly was one of those high-level thinkers, heard things and saw things way beyond what most of us do, and the fact that he was never able to get it under control. And, you know, I think if that unfortunate incident that led to his death hadn't happened, he might have been able to get straight and actually do some more important things. You know, he didn't really do that many recordings. He did some records with Weather Report. He did his two solo albums. Got dropped from his label before he could ever do a third one. Did some work with other artists like Joni Mitchell, and it seems like he could have offered so much more to the world of music. And it's just so sad that he had to go. But there's no denying his revolutionary impact on the bass, as well as on jazz and on music, really, in a lot of ways. Some of those guys call him the Hendrix of the bass. What he really revolutionized was the electric bass and how people played it. And he took the bass beyond just being an instrument that plays the roots all the time and really into the realm of a melodic instrument and an expressive instrument. And I think even upright players who came after him, they were influenced by what he did. But the other thing about it is that nobody plays like him. People have tried, but nobody really can play like him. And because of his background, he brought so many different things to his playing and incorporated so many musical styles into his playing. He was one of a kind. And he was a consummate musician and had an incredible ear, an incredible memory for music. And as I said, revolutionized the bass, but also just revolutionized music in a lot of ways. Because more than just bass players, were influenced by him. Everybody who played with him was influenced by him somehow. He was an inspirational figure until he started getting really kind of crazy. He was very inspirational to those around him. So I highly recommend seeing this film if you can get your hands on it. I actually got a copy at Guitar Center, so I know that they're available at Guitar Centers. I think you can go to the website, jacopastorius.com, and you could probably order it there, or at least find out where it's available. And it just came out this week, so definitely try to get a hold of it, even if you're not a bass player. In my opinion, Jaco is right up there with Charlie Parker and Coltrane and Miles and those people. You know, he's another person that really has made a big impact on modern music. Now, I will say the other thing that really struck me when I was watching this is just because of all the changes in music in the last 15 years or so, I don't know if we'll ever have a moment like this again. I don't know if we're ever going to have anybody who's going to come along and just blow everyone away like Jaco did or like Hendrix did or Coltrane or I don't know if you're ever going to see any groundbreaking records like Sgt. Pepper or Pet Sounds or later records like OK Computer or things like that because nobody's buying albums anymore. Everything is singles based and actually nobody's buying music anymore. So who can afford to spend the time that you would have to make a record like OK Computer these days? That's the saddest thing to me, is that we've lost something. I'm afraid we're never going to see it again. I'm afraid we're never going to see this level of artistry in music. Right now, everything you hear on the radio, with the exception of a couple things, is very manufactured sounding, computerized, auto-tuned, quantized to the nth degree. Electronic and even the acoustic sounds are just being mangled into loops and samples. And I don't know. I don't know if we can come back from this. Certainly hope so. You know, I've even seen it in the kind of people I'm getting as students lately. I see a lot of people who want to be stars, but I don't see anyone like Jaco. One of the things they mentioned was Jaco said to his brother, I need to do something that revolutionizes the electric bass. I don't know if you're going to hear people say that now. I think you're going to hear people say, I need to get famous. And, you know, it's easier to get famous if you make some cheesy viral YouTube video. You've got Vine stars, you've got YouTube stars. I say all those in quotes. And those are people who are famous, but for what? You've got people who have videos of them playing video games, and they've got people who come and watch them every week. You got people who are just famous because they're kind of a weird, quirky personality. Doesn't really take any talent to be famous anymore. Look at the Kardashians. And talented people, nobody cares about them. And the other problem is that because of this movement of everybody being able to be famous, people now sort of discount talent. They look at something and they say, well, I can do that. And even if they can't do it, they're still convinced they can. And there's a lot of ways you can cheat to do those things now too. It used to be, if you were an artist, you could change the world. I don't know if we can do that anymore. The world has now become commoditized and corporatized. And art is not even important to people anymore. And when we lose the ability to recognize and appreciate art, I feel like humanity loses their soul. Something else I'm geeking out about this week, the new David Bowie track, and you got to check out the video if you get a chance. It's called Black Star. He's got a new record coming out in January, but this is the first track from it, and it's 10 minutes long. The video is just crazy. It's pretty wild, and it's dark, but not violent dark, you know. And the song is sort of a mix between psychedelic rock with some free jazz in there and a little bit of funk. Of course, leave it to Bowie to do something interesting. I mean, you know, it's kind of a throwback. It's kind of organic. It's got some synth stuff in it, a few little kind of sequenced sounding things, but I don't think there's any auto-tune. It's real saxophone, real flutes. So definitely check it out if you haven't heard it yet. It's called Black Star. On to Jessica Jones. I'll talk first about some general things, and then when I get into spoiler territory, I will warn everybody so that if you have not watched some or all of it, you can turn it off and come back when you've finished it. So Jessica Jones came out on the 20th of November, 13 episodes in binge watch form, as Netflix usually does. This is the second installment of the Marvel Netflix series. The first one was Daredevil. I've talked about that before. Jessica Jones is a lesser-known character. Now, in the Marvel world, she was created by Brian Bendis. When he created her, she was part of what was called the Marvel Max line, which were all mature audiences or adult type of comics. So they were more graphic violence and some sex and things like that. And I think there were some other established heroes that were part of that, like Punisher. So they kind of retconned her to say that she was a classmate of Peter Parker's before she got her powers, and that she saw Spider-Man fight the Green Goblin at their high school and stuff like that. And so in the comics, she gets in an accident and gets hit by something radioactive and gains her powers, which is the way Marvel comics usually would have people get powers. But yeah, so then in more recent years, she's come into the kind of mainstream comic continuity at Marvel, and currently her character is married to Luke Cage, and they have a baby. In the comic books, she tried to be a superhero with a costume. She called herself Jewel. But then there were some episodes that happened, and she gave up being a superhero and became a private eye. And so that's where we come in with her in the beginning of the comic book series. Now, in the Netflix series, it's pretty similar, although they don't really establish that she was a costumed hero first. In the comic books, of course, when she was a costumed hero, she had some encounters with the Avengers and things like that. So they don't really have that in this series, because in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the Avengers are so new that it just couldn't have been done that way. So, yeah, so they did some changes here. All of this stuff I'm talking about right now is so well known that I don't really consider it spoilers. So Luke Cage does show up in this series. They are obviously not married or anything, but he does show up. And Luke Cage is going to be the next Netflix series, and they're already filming, or they might have even gotten it done already. So for a second, let's talk about the actors. So Kristen Ritter as Jessica Jones is just great. You know, I had seen her in Breaking Bad, of course. I'd seen her in Veronica Mars. And then she was in Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 33. And in those, especially in Apartment 33, she had more of a comedic role. And she does bring some of that comedy to this role as well. But the Jessica Jones character is much darker. She is kind of borderline alcoholic, and she has PTSD, which you do find out fairly quickly what her PTSD, you know, what facilitated that. And once again, that's also something that's straight out of the comic. And in fact, in the first episode, there's a lot of shot-for-shot remakes of what was in the comic, but then they start to stray away from it. It's the same basic idea, but of course they have made some changes. Mike Coulter as Luke Cage, totally perfect. I think I had seen him in things, but he would not have been the first person I would have thought of. But he's great in this and fits the role perfectly. David Tennant is the big bad, and when we get into spoiler time, I'll talk a little more about him, but he's great too. And just like with the Daredevil series, it takes a few episodes before you really actually see him clearly. So they kind of keep the mystery going for a while, and you don't know exactly what he did and why he's the bad guy, but you do find out a few episodes in. Rachel Taylor as Trish Walker, also excellent. And Trish Walker is based on another Marvel character, but I'm going to wait until I'm in the spoiler zone to talk a little more about that. Carrie Ann Moss, also great in this as Jerry Hogarth. And in this, she plays an attorney, and it's actually based on a male character with the same last name and a slightly different first name. So all in all, great performances. I think great writing. It does get a little slow in the middle, which they kind of have to do, I'm sure, to stretch it out into 13 episodes. There's a few different cases that she works on, but there's pretty much one main story arc in this. So the other thing too is if you wanted to compare it to Daredevil, for instance, I would say it's probably got a little less violence than Daredevil, although it's pretty close, and it has more sex than Daredevil did. The overall tone of this is noir, and they've even said that that was kind of what they went for. But one thing I should also say is just the music is great. If you listen to the theme first, it starts out sounding like sort of a noir soundtrack type of thing, very jazzy, and then suddenly morphs into this, actually not suddenly, it kind of slowly morphs into this shred fest at the end with electric guitars and stuff. In general, I think the music is really well done. The composer is Sean Callery. I had never heard of him before, but he's got pretty much all TV credits, and it looks like most of them are procedurals. Bones, Medium, Homeland, 24, Elementary. But I think he does a great job with this. So I posted this to Facebook, possibly to Twitter, but I just want to mention, if you are holding off on watching this because you don't like superheroes, I will tell you that nobody wears a mask or a cape or a costume or anything in this entire 13 episodes. This is not a superhero story. True, there's a couple people who have powers. Jessica Jones has powers. Luke Cage has powers. And you do see a few other people in this that have powers, but they are not wearing costumes and they're not acting like superheroes. This is a mystery. This is a mystery story. It's a noir mystery story at its heart. Now, I think that after this, some of these characters may start kind of coming out as some sort of hero, but I don't see Jessica Jones necessarily wearing a mask. You see her use her powers a couple of times in the first episode, but you don't really see like the full extent of her powers until a few episodes in. And really same with Luke Cage. So that is not what is, I think, considered most important in this story. I definitely think this is worth seeing. Now, you know, if you are triggered by violence or anything like that, maybe not. It's definitely not something you want to sit down your kids and let them watch. It's a very adult story. So now I'm going to get into spoilers. So if you have not seen it, or if you're still kind of in the middle or something and you haven't gotten all the way through it, I would say maybe hold off to listen to the rest of this. But I would love to hear people's thoughts. You know, if you leave me a comment at my website, MichaelJJohnsonMusic.com, I'd love to hear your impressions and what you thought of this. Or you can hit me up at Facebook or Twitter. So here we go, spoilers. So just a couple of things, a few Easter eggs and things that I wanted to point out, especially for those of us who are accustomed to the ideas of the Marvel Universe and that sort of thing. One thing that right away you should know is that Trish Walker, who they later show you as Patsy Walker, has a long history in the Marvel Universe. Patsy Walker started out as sort of an Archie-style comic, like a romance comic in the 40s and 50s, I think. and she was a model and that sort of thing. And then they reintroduced her. Her book ended shortly after Marvel became Marvel. It had gone under some other names before that. And I think when she was created, they were called Atlas at the time. But after Marvel actually became Marvel, her book ended, and then they actually introduced her or reintroduced her into the Marvel superhero continuity, having her show up at Reed and Sue Richards' wedding of the Fantastic Four. Later on, it turns out that she's friends with Beast, and she adopts the persona of Hellcat, which one of the things about her is once they start showing her in the newer Marvel continuity, you find that she has been obsessed with superheroes, and she really wants to become a superhero. And the way that she does it in the comics is she finds this costume that is an exoskeleton and gives her some invulnerability and some strength. So I feel like they're getting us ready for her to become Hellcat with her studying martial arts in the Netflix series. So hopefully that's what's going to happen. I'm kind of excited about that. So Luke Cage, as I said, great. And of course, he's going to be the next series coming up, I believe. Claire Temple, the Night Nurse, who was in the Daredevil series, shows up again, but not until the last episode. There was sort of a tease because I really thought that Daredevil was actually going to show up, but he never really does, to my disappointment. But there'll be plenty of time for that, since at some point they're all going to come together as the Defenders. And a great ending, of course, with Kilgrave kind of upping the ante and putting a bunch of people under his control, having a bunch of people fighting or trying to kill each other at the end. Jessica really kind of faking him out. I sort of knew, but she fakes him out. He falls for it. And she does really, you do realize that it's probably what had to happen. This guy has too much power. There's no way you could keep him in a prison. So she, I feel like she really did have to kill him. Also want to point out that the character of Will Simpson, and I didn't even realize this at first, but as I did some research, I was suddenly reminded of the character of Nuke, and that's really what he is probably going to become. I was also hoping for a little bit of a Punisher cameo in here, but we didn't get that. So as I said, all in all, really well done. A lot of suspense. Up until some of the later episodes, you really don't know what would happen if Kilgrave was able to get her back under his control. And it's just such a relief later on when you realize that he can no longer control her. So once again, let me know what you all thought of it, and I'd love to hear some of your comments. MichaelJJohnsonMusic.com. You can find me at Twitter, at Mike J. Johnson, SoundCloud.com/MichaelJJohnson. Thanks for listening.